I'm going to call the subcommittee of the General Government Subcommittee to order in relation to the House Bill 5003, the commission budgets. We're here for the Commission on Hispanic Affairs this morning. I apologize that many members of the committee still aren't here. It doesn't reflect their not wanting to know about the various commissions and what's gone on, but we have people in the governor's office. As many people know, we have to get all our hearings in before April 11th, so we have various members testifying in other committees and running around the building, so this shouldn't be reflective of non-interest. It's just a reflection of the fact that we're in a very busy time with the legislature right now. Welcome today. Steve, you want to go ahead and give me the brief on where we're at?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Today you are hearing the budget for the Commission on Hispanic Affairs, the third of the four advocacy commissions that you are looking at this week. The Commission on Hispanic Affairs was established in 1980 at the same time as the Commission on Black Affairs. They were made a state agency in 1983, along with the Commission for Women that had been operating since 1964. The Commission on Hispanic Affairs has a mission, and their mission is to assist the state in providing and moving toward economic, social, legal, and political equality for Hispanic citizens and Hispanic people in Oregon. And they therefore have a mission quite similar to that of the other advocacy commissions. This particular commission, last session, we recall that they received funding for only the first year of the biennium because they were under a Secretary of State audit at the time. They came to the emergency board during the legislative interim. They were required to come forward to show that they were operating in an efficient manner, and the emergency board was convinced of that and did release the second year of funding. They, like the other advocacy commissions, have funding through April 1st in terms of general fund for this biennium and are now here before you for the 03-05 budget.
Thanks, Steve. So we'll go ahead and let the commission begin, and I don't know how you set up to start.
Good morning. My name is Francisca Leva Johnson. I'm the current chair for the Commission on Hispanic Affairs. I've served on the commission. I believe this is my second term. It's been, as was just indicated, a very interesting couple of years. We are, as you well know, appointed from all over the state. We are appointed by the governor because of the expertise that we have and the representation that we can give our community members all over the state. Not being here in Salem, 99.9% of the time does come with its own problems. We have worked very hard. Thanks to the support from DOS, from the administrative, I think it's DAS. I was, it's not a computer term, sorry. DAS. They have been absolutely wonderful in walking us through the processes that we needed to have in place. I think when we met with the e-board last year, we had Gabe Silva on board, who did a yeoman's job of making sure that we had all the checks and balances in place. Getting appointed to a commission, assuming that all the processes are in place, and not being aware that, there are some things that, weren't being done, did cause us some problems. We have, without a doubt, turn that around, and there are sufficient checks and balances. We are very involved as a commission. Last September, we were very fortunate to get a new staff person on board, and I just hope that I don't lose that staff person in the interim here. We are very, very busy. The Hispanic population in the state of Oregon is growing at an alarming rate. It is very underrepresented. There is no representative, really, of Latino since Senator Castillo's moved to another position here. It's not that we're not trying. I did run for the House of Representatives in 2000. And there are many of us out there who want to be that voice, but at this point in time, the Commission on Hispanic Affairs is the only voice. It's imperative that it be here.
I think Representative Dalto might take some issue with that.
Who? From where?
Representative Dalto from Salem, but that's all right.
Okay, all right. Okay. In any case, we're not as well represented as we should be, you know, period. We need more with the number of folks that we have in the state and the issues that are facing us. We are here to present our budget. I can't articulate enough the disappointment and the concern that I have for the budget process that you find yourself in now and the choices that you are having to make. But we are, you know, state agency. We are appointed by the governor. We do have expertise within our population. We are very, very active within our communities, and we need to continue to have that. Have these things been handed out to the representatives here? Okay. We have plan, our legislative report that outlines our strategies, our community service, what we've done for fundraisers, surviving with very little money in the time that we've been in place. We've accepted time and time and again the dictates to do more with less. I have with me our executive director, Samuel Silva, and I know the first name, but what's the last name?
Satish
Upatya. With us as well. If there are questions, I'm not sure how much you want me to go over this. I'm not sure what your process is.
We have your responses, so we'll go ahead and go over those separately.
Okay.
So you don't need to repeat those. Just go ahead, and we'll hit the kind of the high points if we may.
Okay. Someone, you want?
Representative Butler, members of the committee, you have no idea how much I've been looking forward to today, especially to share with you some information.
Identify yourself for the record somewhere.
Excuse me. My name is Samuel Davila. I am the new director of the Commission for Hispanic Affairs. I have been director now going on 7 months, not quite, a couple of weeks shy. And as I was saying, Representative and members of the committee, that I've been looking forward, actually, to coming and being able to share with all of you some of the highlights, the work that the Commission on Hispanic Affairs has done. Believe me, as a community member, this commission is very well respected. Prior to having come to the commission, I worked with the United States Census Bureau as a partnership specialist. My role in the U.S. Census Bureau was to assure that an accurate count of migrant farm workers was done accurately. At the time when we had our regional meetings up in Seattle, it was expected that our target goal, was for us to reach a 5% undercount. That would have been 2 percentage points lower than what the undercount from 1990. The end result was a 3% undercount, at least with the Hispanic farm worker community and in general. And that did not happen because of the sole efforts of the U.S. Census Bureau. The commissioners and the then director of the Commission on Hispanic Affairs did incredible work in promoting to the Hispanic community the importance of this civic process, of this civic exercise, to the point where people who were concerned, people who had fears of identifying themselves, getting themselves counted, understood and were able with facts to to assess how important it is that they be identified because of the economic contributions that came, because they were important enough, not because of their legal status, not because they were immigrants, not because they were male or they were youth or they were old, because they were people. And I personally want to testify that the Commission on Hispanic Affairs was incredibly instrumental. It actually did the legwork to form a Hispanic Complete Count Committee. We called them CCCs, Complete Count Committees, back then. And it was actually the most effective one in the whole Northwest. It was one that I very much received some credit for. But in all honesty, it was the Commission on Hispanic Affairs that did the legwork, not just through the director, but very much through the leadership and the trust that each of the commissioners had already established within their respective communities. When I was contemplating applying and doing some work with the Commission on Hispanic Affairs, I had to ask myself some serious questions. Was I going to be part of a commission that was more symbolic than substantive? So I had to actually also do some internal searching, some investigating, some studying. And aside from my experience with the census, aside from my personal experience with having been director of a nonprofit organization here in Salem called Mano a Mano, which at the time received a great deal of support and hard facts about the Hispanic population and issues that the Hispanic population is facing, specific information as to how Hispanic members can access government, can access government. Even after all of that, I still had to ask myself, was this a commission? Was this a place where I wanted to spend part of my life? Is this an area that I wanted to work in? And the end result was overwhelmingly yes. I had an opportunity to prior interview and sit down with a number of the commissioners, and I was awed. I was incredibly humbled with the type of leadership and representation that exists within the Commission on Hispanic Affairs. The work of our chairperson, Mrs. Francisca Leyva Johnson, her leadership in the Eugene community is unparalleled, I would say, especially in the areas of human rights. Dr. Dovi Trevino, a strong advocate, articulate, a prime model, an example of what Hispanics can accomplish when we really want to, when we can cut through all the chase and overcome all the barriers. The leadership and advocacy that she has done in the area of advocacy and education also is unparalleled with any other Hispanics in the state. So it was people among them that I was going to have an opportunity to work with. I know I'm laying it a little bit thick.
Oh, you're fine. You're fine.
It's exactly what drew me here. So I would like to share with you a little bit about the fact that I have been surprised once I came to the commission at how little a budget was allocated to our commission, literally one staff person. My analysis, and please excuse me for not having this prepared, but I will provide it to you by the end of tomorrow, is that, for example, our budget, which is enough for just one person, about 40% of our annual budget literally goes to my salary, and I would say not very well paid. And the other percentages, which go to PERS, insurance, our rent, the 25-30% of our funds that go to Department Administrative Services fees, state fees, literally consume almost up to 85% of our budget, leaving our commission with a rough estimate this year of about $11,000 for us to operate. I know that there has been some encouragement, a great deal of encouragement, for our commissions to go on and fundraise on our own. But it does present a challenge, and I would like to present specific. I would like to answer specific questions, counter arguments to that in a few minutes.
That doesn't mean we haven't fundraised.
Absolutely.
You know, the successes that we've had to provide our youth summits, you know, the things that we've done have been done because the community has supported it. So we've done some pretty tremendous good things for kids, and we will continue to do that. So it's not that we are not fundraising. You know, to fundraise for our general operation is not what is done. I do fundraising for a living as well. So
I think Mr. Boddy will tell us briefly about the old 305 budget that in fact about 35-36% of your budget is from outside sources other than from the general fund. So we will and we'll get also a report of where we have been so we'll know what the road behind us looks like. Continue on, please, someone.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, as I was saying, yes, this last biennium, we were able to raise over $14,000. I believe the exact number is $14,050. And this was actually around one specific project, one of our most successful projects, not the only, which was the Latino Youth Summit. This year we brought over 25 youth from around the state together. And we provided scholarships. We've had incredible support from local businesses, from community-based organizations, even from colleges, educational institutions that believe and recognize the work that the commission is doing to open doors, to demonstrate to youth that there is hope.
I beg your pardon, Senator. Please.
You mentioned that you gave scholarships. Can you tell me specifically how many scholarships that you gave, and tell me to what institutions of higher learning did the young individuals go to, and what were some of the dollar amounts of the scholarships?
Representative Butler, Senator Winters, and members of the committee, we provided 15 youth with scholarships. The total amount of the scholarships was $1,000 each award, and the institutions, by the way, I will provide this committee with an accurate list, line by line, with student, of the higher institutions that the youth attended, including Western Oregon State University, Chemeketa Community College, Oregon State University, University of Oregon, among others.
Can follow up.
Please follow up, Senator. Thank you.
Were these scholarships in addition? I know that George Fuentes has a scholarship program here in Salem, and which that scholarship is out of Chemeketa, I think, Community College. So this is in addition to what George Fuentes is doing. Is that correct?
Senator Winters, absolutely, yes. We very much We appreciate and we really respect the work that Mr. Puentes and his company and his scholarship fund, Sol, I believe they're Sol scholarships. We want to compliment, but we understand that even with the foundations, with the organizations that are out there that exist that provide scholarships, it is by no means enough. We have information that demonstrate that, unfortunately, due to, I would say, a failure of the educational of our educational institutions, we actually have more Hispanic youth that are graduating, that are going into institutions of incarceration, than we have going into higher education institutions. And we believe that that is something that is unacceptable. That's why the nature of the Youth Summit, our Commissioner Dr. Dovi Trevino will highlight some more, is that our Youth Summit focuses not just on providing a banquet, not just on providing an award for $500 or $1,000. It is the substance behind it, because there is actually a retreat that the youth participate in, where they mingle, where they listen, where they participate in trainings, in workshops, in leadership sessions, so that they can be prepared for the experience of college. The vast, over 50% of the dropouts from college happen within the first semester. So that is a specific area that we target to encourage and build each youth to be prepared for their experience in college.
Senator Winters, I'd like to give you a little bit of history. In the past, we have done youth summits where we have brought over 300 kids, or up to 300 kids, to inside the universities. We've been at Western. We've brought 280, if I'm not mistaken, to 285 to the University of Oregon. And we did that for a number of years, and that is not a sustainable thing to do. Number one, the funding and the effort that it took was huge. So this past summit that we did, we chose to limit what we were going to do, and we decided that we would work with at-risk kids that could use the leadership training. We took them to Tillicum for an intensive leadership training, in addition to providing them with these scholarships, because we need to get those leaders within our community to go back and encourage the kids who are still in high school. So we were looking for not the kids who are succeeding and are eligible for scholarships, because of their grades and because of their community service, but those kids that are falling through the cracks. And Dr. Trevino and the folks that put the summit on this last summer, it was a leadership type of a summit. You know, the communities throughout the state sent us the kids that they thought had the most influence within their communities to have that intensive training, to get that opportunity to go back to their community colleges or universities and begin the process. And we do have testimony that, we are the answer. There's a lot of folks providing support to kids, that can get it. It's those at-risk kids that we targeted this year. So we may go back to 300.
Yes, but I would like to follow up, because you had mentioned the summit, and I know that here in Salem there is the effort that's put on at Willamette, are you a participant in that effort as well, in the students, both the students of color? I'll just use that because it's broader than just one ethnic group that meets at Willamette. And
I can only speak for what I do in Eugene, and whatever is happening in Eugene, I am totally immersed and involved in it.
Mano is very active in Salem.
And I'm sure that Dr. Trevino is asked on probably 10 times a day to please provide some kind of support for a workshop or something, and I don't believe she ever receives
it. Senator Winters, can I just ask you a question regarding this February 22nd activity, the People of Color Action Action Academy that was held here in Salem? That's on the introduction that's not dated here from Samuel Davila.
If I'm not mistaken, we've co-sponsored that along with other organizations for years.
Okay. Are you familiar
with
that?
I am familiar. And
is that Willamette? Is that where that's at?
Yes.
Okay. But what
is that what you were referring to?
That's what I was referring to. But it gives me a segue into another question, a larger question, because what kind of work are you doing with the Department of Ed and the institutions to where you're getting them to do, because with limited resources, to get them to do what you're doing, with working with the at-risk youth and getting them to begin to take on those responsibilities?
I'll just speak. Okay. Well, let Dr. Trevino answer this. Would you like to come up and sit over here with us? She is our education person.
Please pull in a chair there, Dr. Trevino.
We are busy.
Education is key.
Tell us for the record, please, Dr. Trevino.
My name is David Trevino. I am a professor at Western Oregon University in the field of bilingual education, ESL, and multicultural studies. This is my second term with the commission. And you were asking a lot of questions of things that I am highly involved in, and I live here in Salem, so I am highly involved with the university, with seminars, with the Department of Education, with Manu Amano, and with the whole community. And I do this as a representative of the commission.
Senator Winters, I think your question dealt with. If I can just jump in for a moment. One of the best teachers is someone who can teach someone else to take over their spot. And in that process, have you been bringing the educational institutions along so that they can that in the next generation that they can go ahead and take the bull by the horns themselves and do it for themselves?
Absolutely. If you would like for me to tell you some things that the commission has done and things that I have done as a commissioner, I can start from here backwards or from the time I was first appointed.
Well, perhaps for Senator Winter's benefit, because we are talking in specific about the February 22nd activity, the People of Color Action Academy, that might be a good place to start, Dr. Trevino, and then you could just elaborate there, and then we'll go on with the rest of the testimony.
On the academy, Sam was the leader in that, and if he needs help, I'll take it from the academy, and then other questions.
Let's talk about the.
Muchas gracias, Representative Butler, members of the committee. I think that is a fabulous question, it is precisely questions like that that during our commission meetings we ask ourselves: how are we doing our work? How are we not reinventing the wheel? How are we assessing the work that we're doing, that others are doing? How can we make it stronger? Through the February 22nd People of Color Action Academy, the primary focus of that academy was to bring in community members from throughout the state to listen to community organizers, to listen to themselves, listen to the issues that they're facing, and sit down and understand the processes that exist in state government to address these challenges. So it was not just a summit to take a look at what's taking place throughout the state, but also to take a look at what they themselves can do to influence policy, to reach out and get themselves heard before the state legislature. So it was very much an advocacy training. Now, in the area of education, we are very, very proud of the work that we're doing right now. We have started a campaign called Education Coalition Building. We understand that throughout the state, there are countless community organizers that understand precisely the challenges that Hispanic youth are facing throughout the state. They understand and they don't see the educational institutions as barriers, as problems. Quite the contrary, they want to work together. What we have, though, throughout the state is multiple organizations that are sometimes working in disconnect, sometimes are repeating, duplicating the work that they're doing. So our campaign called the Education Coalition Building is focused around the Commission on Hispanic Affairs, bringing Professor Commissioner Dr. Dovi Trevino, our Education Advocate Coordinator, and myself and other commissioners to different communities to have sit-down sessions with community advocates, with social service providers, with education organizations that provide educational services, and school districts, and sit down and assess what's working and what's not. I'll tell you this. We had latter part of February, excuse me, I'll give you the date, we invited our new superintendent of public schools, Susan Castillo, to attend the first Education Coalition Building meeting. Back then we called it Education Advocate Gathering. We in Eugene, yes, where she was able to first to introduce herself and provide and answer some key questions that people had. But the end result of that meeting was the formation of an ad hoc committee on education, which they called the Latino Education Coalition. We had a follow-up meeting, which was already programmed. And by the way, we have multiple meetings throughout the state already organized. Our commitment is so great, and that of the commissioners, that they will continue even after our commission no longer has funds, effective April 1st.
Specifically ask if that's meeting your request.
Where I want to go to is that given the, I'll go back. I call myself your parent. Your parent and the parent of the Black Commission. I was on Vicotea's staff and was responsible for working to do the staff development in order to create the commissions. And part of one of the overriding responsibilities of the commission is to identify problems and issues affecting the Hispanic community and the Black community. And then to make, at once identifying those issues, to make recommendations to the legislature so you can have broad-based change. And so that's where I'm trying to lead this discussion. In the work of the commission, because you have limited resources, and where your work is identifying something in the educational community, where obviously, and I know that there's some individuals I know in the audience who work very closely in identifying problems in the Salem Kaiser School District and attempt to try to get them to bring about change as it affects the Hispanic community and the Black community. So I want to know, as the State Commission, you know, what your focus is statewide on issues that deal with the Hispanic community and what your recommendations to date are, if we're talking about education, for example, or you're talking about the economies, for example, because that really is the overriding, in addition to this fundraising, and that's a whole other issue, but that really is the overriding mission for the commissions.
Yeah. Representative Butler and Senator Winters and members of the committee, then let me be more precise. As you know, our commission has had challenges. It had a serious challenge that I believe our commissioners, our commission, came out and literally we came out stronger than ever before. In our budget, in our proposal, and through the sessions that we've had in assessing what are our plans to precisely make sure that we fulfill the mandates of the legislature and of the governor, we have developed first a common survey, which we are in the process of distributing to get organizations, community members, and other individuals to tell us what issues are so we can validate them. One, through the education advocate gatherings, we are in the process of developing coalitions so that local communities that are facing major challenges in education, they can identify what their issues are. Third, we have committed, and we have as one of our goals, to issue an annual State of Hispanics in Oregon report in which we will highlight what the major barriers are that Hispanics are facing, what challenges, and at the same time provide recommendations to state agencies, to the legislature, also in the area of highlighting specific issues that Hispanics are facing. We are very much of the belief that we can have one commission that is championing, that is very much highlighting what the issues are, but we believe that it is much, much stronger when a community is empowered to do so. That is why through the coalition building, through, if you will see, the legislative update document that we send out, it literally is getting out to hundreds and hundreds of individuals. We are receiving mail and emails from community organizations and individuals telling us, my God, we did not know that these issues are taking place. Well, overall, what we have is, through these legislative updates also, we have people identifying and prioritizing what their issues are. But overall, let me just say that, in direct response, through the coalition building, and second, through the State of Hispanics in Oregon report, we will be providing a direct update with hard facts and recommendations to the legislature.
I also want to add that I indicated earlier when we started that you've got a lot of strengths and a lot of professionals within the commission. I personally have served on the school board for 16 years and have used the resources of the school boards, the COSA. I'm still very involved in that. I currently serve on the Lane Community College trustees. We are wherever we can get plugged in as individuals in our individual communities. That's where our strength comes, and that's where the networking is very important so that we can bring those issues. There is no question that the dropout rate is of major and vital importance to us in this state for our kids.
Regarding the dropout rate, and you've given us a very high dropout rate, that dropout rate, I understand, is higher amongst Hispanics. Is that true? Higher amongst Hispanics than all other
put together,
all other racial combinations
put together.
Okay,
put together.
And what is that, Debbie?
That percentage has been varying depending on what district you talk to, but statewide the percentage is 43. You have middle schools and everything. It's in the 43-47 percentile.
College level?
No, we're talking about high school. College, they do not get there, Representative Butler, unfortunately. They don't get that far. However, I would like to, I sense that Senator Winner's question was not answered. And I would specifically like to answer your question. I believe you asked what are the issues, do we identify issues, and how do we make recommendations, and how do we reach the community?
More importantly, how do you reach this legislative body and the governor?
What do we do? All right, we are aware by studying what's going on. Let me give you an example of No Child Left Behind. How does that impact our schools? How does it impact the state, the school districts, financially? Some of the information comes from the Department of Education at the federal level, and some here. And then there are points where, as individuals, we bring that information to our senators and our representatives, since they have so many other things going on, they're not as familiar as some of us are. Now, in November, Eduardo Angulo and I, at our own expense, paid for a trip to Washington, D.C. to get the actual law of No Child Left Behind and the impact it has on our community. Very few people know that the No Child Left Behind under it has specifically for language minority students. Okay? That is in the little red book that comes out of the federal government. So how do we impact our community? Last month we had over 750, certainly over 500 people from the community coming together at McKay High School. This was put on by the Salem Coalition, the Hispanic Commission, and we were able to work with the Salem Kaiser School District to let the parents know how this law is impacting them. The bottom line with the No Child Left Behind is you will have sanctions if you don't succeed, or you will have rewards if you succeed. To be able to involve that many people was just shy of a miracle. It was the day that the astronauts had their accident, and we were thinking, my goodness, no one's going to come, everyone's going to be glued to the television. Yet we had over 500 parents come and learn about that. Do we make an impact? Yes. Now, educationally speaking, we're talking about all those children whose parents do not know that within 3 years they will not be able to be educated in their language because it's the English-only rule that is going through there. I say parents, Senator Winters, I think parents should know that. And certainly our involvement was with that. Working with the school district, Salem-Keizer School District, where are the teachers, what is their training, and giving workshops.
If given the limited resources, if this attention, or if it had been discussed with or impressed on the Board of Education, which is their responsibility to assure that No Child Left Behind is implemented, I guess I want to get to the broader context of the work. I think grassroots work is absolutely laudable and essential. But when resources are limited, I think that the pathway of getting that entity who is responsible for assuring in the state of Oregon that they're carrying out their responsibility.
Well,
so I'm looking for
a broader thing. Well, I can assure you beyond shadow of a doubt that the Board of Education did not have the word, nor did the superintendent of the schools around here. We have testified before them. When we came back from Washington, the Department of Education asked me to give a briefing statewide to all the institutions of higher education that provide bilingual ESL programs to the teachers who work with our students. I was very happy to do that. And again, this is as a volunteer, as a commissioner, as an educator. Then following that up, we gave testimony to the Board of Education in Salem-Keizer School District. And I personally, on a number of occasions with my dean from Western Oregon University, have met with Superintendent Baker and also with Susan Castillo, our state superintendent. So we work together to see what are they doing, what do they know, and how can we advocate for our children. So, yes, it is very widespread, and it is quite well known.
Does that get to your concern, Senator?
Yeah, I guess, you know, two. One of my concerns is living when you're in a very environment that has reduced revenues, that the commission's resources is very limited, which suggests to me that part of the strategies has to be to get those agencies, to those institutions who are responsible for the activity, you know, somehow your work is to get them to do what you're doing. Because your resources are so limited. The other piece of it is to let this body know and the governor know so that you can begin to spread it out in order to assist you in your endeavors. I have another question. I need to go outside because somebody just came to grab me. But I ask this of the other group, given the limited resources, and I know sometimes we can't fit all the pieces together and some of it doesn't work. But is there a way of sharing some of the commonalities of what you and all the other commissions have in common in stretching these resources, whether it is, and I don't know where space, but I do know here in Salem that that they work very closely together on issues that relate to education, on issues that relate to the economics, and so and maybe through that process, whether we're talking the Hispanic Commission or the Black Commission or the Asian Commission, there's some commonalities that maybe you guys can join together on in order to make this work. And I'd just like for you to think about that. Are there some ways that you can do some sharing in this limited resource environment? And I apologize, but my budget analyst is calling.
Thank you very much, Senator. I appreciate your thing, and I did want to apologize also for my being tardy. I got tied up with Superintendent Rucker this morning of the state police on some other issues, and we were taking care of a telephone call, so, and that's why I was a little bit late. But I want to move back up to about the 30,000-foot level and just take a quick look at the commission, if I may. And looking at your information, the mission statement says that it's created to work for the implementation and establishment of economic, social, legal, and political equality of the Hispanics in Oregon. Now, it also, and we understand that amongst those realities include the education, Debbie, that you've been addressing. Let me ask this: the statute goes on and says that you will give an annual report to the governor and an update to the legislative assembly. Did you provide an annual written report to the governor of the issues that are affecting social, legal, political, economic realities of the Hispanic community in Oregon?
Representative Butler, members of the committee, I'll be also to the point. Due to the fact and the controversy and the challenges that the Commission on Hispanic Affairs faced this last legislative session, we were not able to provide a concise, direct report. It is precisely in response to the mandate that our State of Hispanics in Oregon report will be issued this coming September. As an ongoing, we extremely regret the challenges that we faced, and I believe that many of the commissioners and the commission itself came out exonerated. We have a letter from the Secretary of State for the past audit, just the last audit that we had.
And we do have, from the Audits Division, for the record, we do have from Audits Division, Kathy Polino, the director over there,
yes,
that the penultimate paragraph says, we found that the commission took appropriate action to protect the state's assets, the former director's separation from the agency relative to the departure of Gabriel Silva.
Yes.
And so we do have the change of director audit, which has been confirmed by the Secretary of State's office. The next question I wanted to ask was that relative to the commission itself, is the commission fully organized? All members present accounted for within your body of an organization? 9 members? Okay. And it also indicates that there are 2 members from the legislative assemblies, one from the House and one from the Senate. Who are those members?
We have
one from Lincolnville.
Senator.
Yes.
Brown.
Representative Donna Nelson from the House.
Okay.
Yamhill County. And, yes, we are awaiting confirmation from Senator Tony Corcoran to represent the Senate on the commission.
And previous to Senator Corcoran's nomination and...
Senator Susan Castillo.
Susan Castillo.
Correct.
Okay. And did you have the number of commission meetings? How many commission meetings were held during the current biennium?
Every month.
Approximately.
We have one every month.
Okay.
And we strategy that we use, because we're all over the state, is telephone conferencing. We probably did about 80% of those calls. We were without, administrative support. We did spend an incredible amount of time getting ourselves back together as a commission, working to put the checks and balances in place and comply with everything that DAS wanted. We did an executive director search. Then we stopped because executive hires were frozen, and then we started again. It's been a really roller coaster year in trying to get, number one, organized, trying to get the staff on board. We have met, and the subcommittees that have been working throughout the whole biennium to get ourselves to the point that we are today, that we are staffed, and we have been meeting on a regular basis, and it's the fourth Saturday of the month. We do it on a Saturday so that our community is able to attend and make presentations or bring issues to us. I want to get out of Salem. I want to quit meeting in Salem. I want to go back. When I first got on the commission, we were actually going to NISA. We were actually going down to Medford, and we were actually going to our respective communities that we have representatives on the commission from to hold community meetings.
So that's
our goal.
With the exception of Senator Corcoran, all members have been confirmed at this time. And The members are all active at this time, too.
And they are busy.
Okay, good. Good. And I want to make sure that my colleague, Representative Nelson, did you a good job. Did she attend her meetings the way that she was supposed to or participate by phone? Good. Okay.
We do have a little issue. Let's be real honest here. We do have an issue with regard to Senate Bill on 181. She is 180 degrees from what the position is for the commission, but we have agreed to disagree.
Sometimes diversity is good in those
Absolutely.
Kinds of things. I'm not sure what Senate Bill 181 is. Senator, does that ring a bell?
Well,
does that bill ring a bell?
It's not Senate Bill 181. She's got a different number for it.
Oh, yes.
Representative Butler.
Go ahead, Samuel.
Representative Butler, members of the committee. Yes, I believe that in all working bodies, we will come with different interests, strengths, and... yes, we have had some challenges, but I believe that the discussions that we've had around the House bill, I will provide it to you in a second, has actually made us stronger. I will tell you that we are in the process of working very, very closely with Representative Butler in the area of her strong advocacy, which we all support. The commission itself has endorsed of Head Start. It is personally... right after the Census Bureau, I, for 2 years, worked as a Head Start community coordinator. So Head Start is very close to my heart, and I very much look forward to continuing to work with Representative Butler in advocacy for children, especially preschool age children. I'm sorry, Representative Nelson. Please excuse
fine,
me.
Fine, thank you. No, that's fine. And let me just ask this. The annual State of Hispanics in Oregon report, when is the most recent of those reports that we have?
Representative Butler? The title and the structure in which we will have it is a new document that we will be preparing. It will be available. It will, unfortunately, not yet. It will be available September.
Okay.
So that way we can recap.
Samuel, when was the most recent one prepared? Do you know?
I believe that Gabe Silva did give an overview.
Okay.
And a presentation on it was a business plan and the things that were going to be impacting us.
The reason that I'm asking about that is I'm now just reading from your key performance measurements. I'm just trying to target in on some of the performance measurements, because
right.
that's how we do all the budgeting process, and my concern is I just would like to know we'll have one in September, but I'd just like to know what that actual because it is required by the statute, and then it indicates that's a key performance measure that you will complete an annual State of Hispanics in Oregon report. And I just would like, that should give us some of the key statistics that have been mentioned. And I'd still like to key in, because, Debbie, I'm keen on the fact that in my school districts in southeastern Oregon, which, as you're aware, in Malheur County, Malheur and Hood River County, at the opposite ends of Senate District 30, I have the highest percentage population of Hispanic surnames in the state, 26%, Malheur and Hood River. And so I'm very concerned when I see in my schools a 25% dropout of Hispanics, particularly with regard to the fact that I've got a 10% dropout for Caucasian youngsters. That's high enough, but when I've got a 25% of Hispanics, and you quoted a figure as high as 43%. And I would like to get that from some information from the annual summary, if that was last completed by Mr. Was it
Gabe Silva?
Gabe Silva. Mm-hmm. Gabe Silva. We need to get that so that we can get some information on that. And then finally, in amongst the things that were going to be accomplished, you are working on the website, and the funding on the website was to be from the outside. Can you tell me where we're at on the website? Up and running, good.
We have an up and running website.
www.oregonhispanic.org.
We're extremely proud of that website. Now, we must be honest, it is about 30% complete. For many other groups, that website actually would suffice. But the plans that we have, for example, an online voter registration, a map of the state of Oregon with Senate districts, with House districts, with the congressional districts, and not just broken up into those sections, but also the key communities, the larger proportional areas where Hispanics are gathered throughout the state, the key organizations that are providing advocacy and services and educational and the type of scholarships, all the different things, links. We're in the process of creating a clearinghouse of information so that anyone can go to that website and get an accurate view of Hispanics in Oregon. One of the last emails that I received directly as a result of someone viewing our webpage was from Moscow. It was a gentleman from, this was about a month ago, a gentleman from originally from Chile, the country of Chile, and wanting to get some accurate information on Hispanics because of his interest to come to live in Oregon. And it was through that website that he was able to identify where we were, email me, ask me for specific questions, some facts, which I did send back to him.
Sweet.
And
was from Chile, moved to Russia, and now wants to come to Oregon.
Correct.
You're
correct.
A world traveler.
Yes, sir.
Doesn't know about our rain.
This clearinghouse of information, this webpage, yes, it is up and running, but the vision and the plan that we have for it, it is about 30% complete because we want it to be a thorough and complete site where people can access information.
Links into the key Hispanic issues relative to education that we've talked about, or the economic, social, legal, and political issues that are key to the Hispanic community?
Representative Butler, members of the committee, we have unfortunately, some general information. When you visit the website, you will get a couple of paragraphs that in very general and broad terms refer to that. But we will be having a whole list or menu of specific issues that people can click onto and obtain information, statistics, what's being done, who's doing it, what are the challenges, how to contact these organizations, these individuals. That is part of our plan. I would also like to say that in the area of employment, prior to coming to the commission, actually right when I came into the commission, we were receiving countless job descriptions from various organizations and business places of business, informing us, looking at us as basically a bulletin board for the Hispanic community. What we assessed that really was not working too well because we were basically keeping these job descriptions in a binder. What we did was we had a meeting with the employment department, and through the efforts of the meetings, we were able to create a new link, one that we proposed that they did not have, a new link that just by pressing it, immediately people go and get an accurate, up-to-date, day-to-day list of all the jobs or positions that require Spanish language or are looking for someone who is bicultural. We have placed that link onto our website, and the employment department has also done that. So that is
now
it is
good,
functioning.
Great.
That is one way that we're looking to think, work smart, use technology, and partnership with other state agencies where we can provide the qualitative information that they need, so that they can make they can improve and enhance the services that they provide.
Is that through the link that it links it to the employment division for state jobs which require Spanish skills? Is that also other local jobs that require Spanish skills that are published through the Department of Employment, or just state jobs? All other advertising.
Correct. Correct.
Good. Excellent. Thank you very much. I'm sure we've got a number of folks that are signed up. I just wanted to know if there's, and I think we've probably hit some of the high peaks at about 30,000 feet. Are there other questions, specific questions that members of the committee may have of these folks today before we go on to the financial activities? Okay.
Representative Butler.
Yes, Kelly, please.
I had signed up, but obviously I came up before my time.
Yeah, and that's fine. I appreciate because of the good work that you do.
Well, thank you. I did want to, I know that we're going into details and into how have we met our goals and how, what have we achieved. And right now, believe it or not, I'm one of the veteran commissioners on the commission. Throughout our ups and downs, I have worked around the clock with a couple of colleagues without anyone knowing that I'm working in the background. I'm not saying this to give myself a pat on the back and a couple of colleagues. What I am saying that given the largest growing population of minorities in Oregon, that any business, if I were a business person and I'm going to pay only one salary to represent thousands of people, one salary, and I get all of these commissioners that are so committed to give freely of their time, what better deal, what better business can you get? We pay one person a measly little wage. What we want is representation. It makes all of us work better together. Now, we have asked for a miracle for one person to do on one salary on a shoestring. Yet, all of the commissioners that work give 100% of their time. If I were paid for the work that I do, I could retire with that purse.
Just on minimum wage, you could retire.
I could, yes. Not any of us take 1 cent. I have yet to collect one red cent for travel or for any work that I do. What smart businessman would close down his business when he has 99% of the work being done free by commissioners? What smart business or what smart government would do that? You pay one person and you get nine others doing all the work, reaching your largest population. And then we're going to cry about keeping this little bitty office, paying one person McDonald's wages, and we want to close it and shut the mouth up of all the Hispanics and all of the blacks? That doesn't make any sense. It really does not make any sense. I can tell you of all of the good things we've done. Bottom line is, will we get funded or not? And I really would like to address all of you and say, if you don't, you are shutting off and shutting out the largest minority in this state. The one, as Senator Smith said, they work the fields and they make it affordable for us to have food in our cabinets and food in our refrigerator. Yes, those are the people we talk about. We call them the silent minority. Then, of course, you get someone like me that's not very silent. But let's be fair about this whole thing. How many of my people cannot represent themselves? I thank God and I thank this country for the good education I have. Out of a family of 14, parents born in Texas that spoke no English, and often being told, why don't you go back where you came from? Well, guess what, buddies? I am where I came from. Representative Butler and committee, it would be unconscionable to not budget one position. When all of the work we do and all of the people we reach, you couldn't do free. It is very, very trying to be one little lone salmon going up the river to spawn. We protect those fish more than we do our people. Is that right? I can't believe that. I don't have to be the director. I don't have to be the chair. But by golly, I can be the biggest mouthpiece for our people and our community and tell you that no government, no business that has any sense in their head would cut off their nose to spite their face. And that's exactly what we're doing. If you cut this, how many goals must we reach? How many mountains will we climb to have one position funded so that Samuel can pay his rent? We can go through all of it. What did you do? What did you do or not do? That make any sense. I apologize for this because I know that the mainstream society does not like to see emotional outbursts like some of us Mexicans have. And I don't apologize for it. Because you know what? I can sugarcoat everything and then you'll get out and forget it. And if I don't sugarcoat it and I tell you exactly what you're doing to our community, then maybe you'll go home and say, gee, how many kids am I keeping from the education today? How many people in the colored community are we denying their rights just because they're the silent majority? There's something inhuman about that. And we're going to squabble about one salary when you get free work from 10 other members and we reach everybody in the state. Does that make sense to you? It doesn't to me. And I don't have to be a college graduate to know that that does not make any sense at all.
Thank you very much, Debbie. We appreciate your impassioned plea on behalf of the Hispanic community. And that does mean a great deal to us. And we do have, as Senator Winters indicated, a great deal of issues we've got to sort out between now and the end of these sessions relative to what issues we're going to address and accommodate. And I want you to know that the 8%, which is a large percentage of our population, according to the 2000 demographics, is not going to be overlooked in this whole process, the Hispanic community. We do appreciate the good work that you do and all of the commissioners do, not just of the Hispanic Affairs Commission, but of all of the advocacy commissions. And we are concerned about the budget issues we've got. And if we are going to address those concerns which we have relative to education and public safety, as well as our health issues in the state of Oregon, to take care of our people in the state of Oregon, particularly those who are most vulnerable, not easily taken care of. And I do want to say this with regard to our Hispanic community. I appreciate very much the way that the Hispanic community and the Asian community and others of the minority populations in the state of Oregon look after their own and do care for their own. I mean, it's a culture of taking care of your own, taking care of the elderly, and that's something that all of Oregon needs to learn from.
Yes.
A great deal. So as we go through the budget deliberations, I assure you that your voice is being heard, and I appreciate your comments, and we're going to go ahead now and continue on with our presentation from Budget and Management. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And thank you very much, Mrs. Francesca and Samuel as well. Thank you so much.
I just want to make sure that we're on the same page. You know that as you consider your public safety, as you consider the health issues, as you consider education, we're in that vein. No matter where you go, we're going to be part of the issues that you're facing in education, public safety, and health issues.
I ignore 8% of the population.
You sure can't. We're going to be there. And I want to be real clear that we have had a tough time in the last 2 years. There's a lot of things that we should have had done. There's a lot of things that we, you know, had we known we were supposed to have it done and get it to and had a timeline, you would have had it. We just are getting on our feet. We've got someone who is going to present and could have presented and have to you whatever you wanted that's in that statue that we're all now aware of, and we're stuck again. You know, it's stop and start, and it's our community that is stopping and starting and getting all these mixed messages. So
thank you very much,
okay.
David Johnson.
Okay.
Chair Butler and members of the committee. Satish Upadhyay with the Department of Administrative Services, and I will be talking to you about the governor's budget for the Commission on Hispanic Affairs for 2003-2005 biennium. And if you would like to turn to page 2 of my presentation document, the budget consists of $228,582 in total funds. This is a 7.2% increase from the 2001-2003 legislatively approved budget through the fifth special session. You'll see in page 3 from the pie chart that about 64% of the budget is general fund and about 36% is other funds from revenues that the department, from the commission plans to raise. With regards to Representative Butler's question again earlier, the commission has been pretty successful in fundraising. During 1999-2001 biennium, the commission raised $92,919 other funds from fundraising and from non-state sources. In the 2001-2003 biennium, when the governor's budget was developed, it was estimated that the commission would raise $51,530 other funds. And in the governor's budget for 2003-2005, it's estimated that the commission will raise $85,611 other fund revenues.
Satish, what are the principal sources of those other funds that are being raised? Are those I noticed in the presentation there's about $40,000 from some of the activities that are as I turn to it's under the revenue package, about $40,000 from the Latino Youth Summit Awards Banquet and grant writing on the web page, about $5,000. Total $40,000. The remaining portion of those funds, do we have those come from all sectors of the community, or do you know?
Mr. Chair, from what I know, the commission approaches different organizations that help. The plan to apply for grants, like the Commission of Women has done, and also donations. And most of the other funds that they raise are for specific projects. So if they raise it, it's spent on that. If they don't raise it, they'll have to cut down on the expenditures.
Mr. Chair, can I ask a question? And I apologize again that I'm in and out, but when you chair the committee, you tend to be in and out.
Senator Winters, one of the committee that you chair is of vital interest to all of the members of this commission, as well as all Oregonians, so we appreciate your being in and out, as long as you're solving issues as you're coming in and out.
Well, I'm trying to.
Sure you are.
Is in-kind allowed as a part of their budget offset for other funds?
Mr. Senator Winters, yes, this issue has come up because in the current budget there was $10,000 that was general fund unscheduled, and they had to come up with other fund revenues. At that time, I don't think we counted the in-kind. It was all cash. Okay. But that's certainly an issue I think we could explore.
Because one's contribution that they make to certain things, or if the commissions are very resourceful in communities that are able to get that, I raise that because I wondered if in-kind contribution does apply to offsetting the amount.
Senator Winters, at least for the current biennium, for $10,000 general fund that was unscheduled,
was hard cash.
It was all hard cash for all the commissions. We haven't included any in kind.
But you're referring to the charge which the general government gave to all of the commissions the last session, that they had to go out and raise outside funds to demonstrate that they had inroads into their communities.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
And that you're attesting to the fact that's obviously been successful down here.
Yes, for this commission, it has been. They have been successful.
Thank you.
And they have all of their amounts rescheduled. So.
Please proceed, Satish.
If we turn to page 4, the major changes approved during the various special sessions. During the third special session, there was an addition of $1,169 general fund for employee compensation adjustments. And during the fifth special session, there was a reduction of $5,053 general fund as a prorated reduction. Now, the governor's budget, it enables the agency to continue its operations, its existing operations. It provides $146,892 general fund to pay for the executive director position and other operating costs. And it also establishes $81,690 other funds expenditure limitation to enable the commission to spend these funds. these donations it receives for program activities such as the annual Latino Youth Conference. Now, when we look at the budget categories, about 54% of the budget consists of personal services, and 30% is services and supplies, and 16% is special payments.
Now, I just wanted to confirm that the testimony was given about 30% went to pay salary, and that is 54% pay salary and benefits.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I believe what Stan was trying to imply was just the salary portion, but total personal services costs with salary and benefits is 54%.
All right, thank you.
Now, how was the budget developed? The starting point was a 2001-2003 legislatively adopted budget. This consisted of $113,249 total funds. As you might remember, the last legislature just approved a one-year budget during session. And this was increased by $103,961 total funds during the April 2002 E-Board, Emergency Board for the second year operations. Then there was a base budget adjustment for roll-up costs of 2001-2003 position actions and compensation changes. This was an increase of $1,792 general fund. The budget has two essential packages. Package 010 provides adjustments for temporary appointments and mass transit taxes. This is an increase of $250 total funds. And package 030 provides $9,330 total funds for standard inflationary increases and state government service charges. There are two policy packages which wash each other. Package 091 has a reduction of $10,460 general fund and 0.11 full-time equivalent position as a result of the 2002 fifth special session actions. And package 092 restores that reduction, so it pretty much lets the agency operate as it is right now.
Are there questions for Mr. Upadhyay from BAM? No, being no questions, I'll go ahead then. And Steve Bender?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'll be happy to answer any questions the committee might have. There now is public testimony.
Okay.
People are signed.
Well, I have you next on my list, but I can certainly jump over to public testimony.
Oh, okay.
See, you were right after Mr. Upadhyay.
But yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't speak this.
You already did your spiel. I beg your pardon. You've done that while I was unavoidably detained. So, on behalf, thank you very much. We appreciate it. And we'll go now into the public testimony.
Come on.
And good morning, Representative Johnson.
I apologize for being late, Mr. Chair. I needed to go testify on a bill.
Appreciate your being here today. I understand how tough that can be. Leonie Reeves from the Oregon State Bar Diversity Section. Leonie, if you'll hit the high points for us, we've got your testimony. Thank you very much for coming today.
Absolutely. Chair Butler, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Leonie Reeves, and I have been asked to come down and speak on behalf of the Executive Committee of the Oregon State Bar Diversity Section. I need to make it clear that I'm not here on behalf of the entire Oregon State Bar or the Board of Governors, but I am here on behalf of the Diversity Section. Our Chair, Melvin Odin Orr, could not be here this morning, so I've come in his place, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here testifying before you. I'll keep my comments brief because, like you've already acknowledged, Chair Butler, that we have submitted written testimony. I'd like to just briefly read you part of the mission of the Oregon State Bar Diversity Section, and that will explain why we are here this morning. The mission reads, "The Oregon State Bar Diversity Section envisions an Oregon State Bar that reflects the diversity of the people of Oregon. Diversity is essential to assure that people of differing cultures and experiences have access to lawyers who share those differences." So we are a group of diverse lawyers. We comprise public and private attorneys, government, nonprofit representatives, people who are ethnic and minority lawyers, people with disabilities who are involved in the legal profession, either as attorneys, advocates, judges, lobbyists. We're a diverse group. What we do agree on, and what the diversity section has agreed on, is that we believe the advocacy commissions are important, and we're here to speak on behalf of all of the commissions: the Commission for Black Affairs, Asian Affairs, Hispanic Affairs, and the Commission for Women. The Advocacy Commissions identify issues that affect the communities, as Senator Winters stated earlier, that is one of the goals of these commissions. They help the communities understand government. They help the communities understand what their role in government can be, and they serve as a voice for these communities of color. And in the end, they help create a more diverse and more representative government, and we believe that that will lead to better justice and better service for all of our citizens. I think that one other thing I would like to acknowledge is that, and it's been discussed today, is that we have one staff person, one paid staff person, who's essentially out there trying to advocate and to work on behalf of communities that are large. I mean, like we've heard, the Hispanic population is 8% of Oregon's population, and to have one paid staff person working to serve the needs of a population that large is challenging. So I'm going to keep it very short. We are here just to urge this committee and the members of this committee to take these thoughts into consideration while you move through this very difficult budget process. You know, I'll rely on the written testimony for the rest of our statement. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Other questions for Leonie?
Thank you, Leonie. You've done an excellent job in advocating on behalf of all three of the commissions that you testified on behalf of thus far, and we do appreciate it. The diversity section of the Oregon State Bar, how many folks are there in that particular section?
The year is new. We just rolled over into a new year, 2003. Last year, I believe we had about 130 to 140 paid members.
I see. Members and paid staff?
There is not.
No paid staff.
They're not. I mean, there's the bar staff that helps administer the section, but the diversity section itself does not have paid staff.
So you practice as an attorney and then donate your time to the diversity section then?
Correct.
Great. Okay, good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Angulo, Eduardo Angulo.
Thank you, sir. Good morning, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Eduardo Angulo. I am the Oregon Commission on Hispanic Affairs Education Advocate. I'm also the chairman of the Salem Kaiser Coalition for Equality. I'm here today to testify on behalf of all our advocacy commissions. I am also here to give testimony regarding the involvement of the Oregon Commission on Hispanic Affairs and Black Affairs in the issues that affect our children of color here in Salem Kaiser and throughout the state. Our Salem Kaiser Coalition for Equality has the Commission on Black Affairs and the Commission on Hispanic Affairs as supporters in principle of our mission. Our mission is to ask for accountability to our education administrators in our school district. We have worked on the blueprint for accountability in terms of what are the administrators, what are the principals, what are the board members of the school district doing to help us with our incredible high suspension rate of Afro-American, Native American, and Latino students. What are they doing to help us with the incredible numbers of or differences, I should say, in terms of the academic achievement of Afro-American and Latino students? Let me give you a picture of what is happening in the Salem Kaiser area that is a microcosm of what is happening throughout Oregon. It's 70% is a C average, C grade. 90% of Afro-American, Latinos, and Native American kids are in the 30th percentile on reading, writing, and doing math. The advocacy that the Commission on Black Affairs and the Commission on Hispanic Affairs does do on behalf of these children, particularly here in the Salem-Kaiser area, it is of utmost importance for us to, for the past 4 years, to put the issue of accountability in terms of what is the school district doing to help us with our kids of color in regard to the incredible disparity in reading, writing, and doing math.
Can I ask you, Eduardo, if I could?
Yes, Chairman.
The Salem-Keizer Coalition for Equality, is that sponsored through a school district?
No, Representative Butler.
Tell us about your organization.
Members of the committee, yes. The Salem-Keizer Coalition for Equality is a coalition of community organizations. We are 15 community organizations that include Mano a Mano Family Center, mm-hmm. Latinos Unidos Siempre is our youth Latino group in the area. It includes PECUM, the Farm Workers Union. It includes the Salem-Keizer NAACP. It includes the Willamette University MECHA students. It includes 100 people, a group of middle wealthy retirees working on the issues of equal education. It includes the Juntos Club from the Chemeketa Community College.
And tell us, if you would, just briefly, Eduardo, I'm interested in it because it appears to have many of the same directions that the commission does in its thrust and desire to make sure that the job gets done. Is it funded by charitable organizations? Is that how it's funded?
I'm glad you asked that question. We are a group of volunteers.
Okay.
Chairman, members of the committee. We are a group of volunteers that we have, for the most part, put our lives aside to stop talking about the problems.
Okay.
4 years ago, we came together to stop talking about the problems and hold ourselves accountable at the same time that we hold our school district officials accountable, at the same time that we hold our police officers accountable, at the same time that we hold our Chemeketa Community College, which is where we most likely would like to see our kids, if nothing else.
I'm anxious about one issue that you brought up then at that point. You're anxious and united and organized because of some concerns that you've got in the community, and one of those concerns is to see the youngsters of race in the bottom 30%.
Yes, yes.
Of education, and that's after all that's been said and done. There's more that's said than done, obviously.
Yes.
Are you making some headway?
Representative Butler, members of the committee, we're finding ourselves in an incredible situation, one that our economic crisis is calling for more involvement from the communities, more involvement from volunteers. And it is one that we have taken, it's a challenge that we have taken head on and put ourselves out there in working, not just going and telling people what they need to do, but in offering ourselves.
Is it seem to be getting the water to the end of the road?
Well, let me just give you a perfect example. Just this past February 1st, as the Executive Director of the Commission on Hispanic Affairs was referring to, for the first time we have a collaboration of sorts between the Salem-Keizer School District and the Salem-Keizer Coalition for Equality. We put together district-wide parents, community, a school gathering called No Leaving a Child Behind. This was, as Dr. David Trevino was mentioning, she and I, we took a trip out of our own pockets to go to the first ever Department of Education conference on No Child Left Behind in Washington, D.C., and we brought in all the laws, all the new regulations to help for the most part, disadvantaged kids. And this, as you know, involves poor white kids. And that is part of our mission statement. We, for the first time, came together with the school district. We have over 650 adults and 500 kids. As a matter of fact, Dr. David Trevino was a keynote speaker, and she came in with a presentation outlining what is the No Child Left Behind Act, and what are the provisions that empower parents and communities to get involved in the schools in trying to reverse this historical gap in terms of education, in terms of just the basics, reading, writing, and doing math.
Okay, now let me ask you the final question, and I've got to zero in on this, and then,
yes,
and then Representative Johnson's got a question, but I've got to zero in on this because we've heard some rather stark numbers relative to education success,
yes,
of these disadvantaged youth. What is the Salem Kaiser dropout and high school rate amongst the Hispanic youth? Do you know?
Yes, I certainly do, Representative Butler, members of the committee. The actual number, and you have to be very careful on how the data is being desegregated.
Mm-hmm.
It's being desegregated on a yearly basis, and it calls for a dropout of 13% for Latino kids, okay, in the high school. One of the things that happened here is that there is no numbers for the dropout in the high school. There are not the numbers for the dropout at the elementary level. And what we are finding ourselves as we are trying to move and change the culture in the individual schools. And when we talk about the educational culture, is for as our demographics keep changing, and we're finding ourselves with a school district that has, while it has 20% of its student population being of a minority descent or from people from other parts of the world, we're finding ourselves with just 4% staff that represent those kids. We know that the dropout, and these are calculations that we have made regarding middle school, many kids don't drop at the high school. We have thousands of kids that drop at the middle school. Then we see the results at the high school. They drop out mentally. They find themselves that they do not fit. They find themselves isolated. And that is where we come in. That is where we are saying, as we put together this parents and community and schools gathering February 1st, that it was an incredible experience because it really showed how are we saying we are here and we are taking ownership of the problem too.
Now, the Salem Kaiser District reports to the State Department of Education what the actual dropout rate of Hispanic youth are in elementary and middle and high school. Do you know what that figure is that's being reported?
Representative Butler, members of the committee, this is going back to the desegregated data. The official number, and you have to be very careful when you talk about what is the official dropout rate number, and it calls for 13%, let's say, in a Latino youth.
Is that what they're reporting to the Department of Education?
Yes, at the high school level.
At the high school level.
Per year. You see, the data is not segregated like, let's say,
but compounds from
compounds.
Year, sophomore year, junior year,
exactly.
And by the time you get to the senior year, you know
it can be 35% dropout rate.
Right.
That's
no.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Representative Johnson's recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With your permission, I'm going to head in a slightly different direction.
The chair yields the gavel then to Representative Johnson as you head in that different direction.
Thank you. When you introduced yourself, you said that you were an education advocate. I thought you said for the Hispanic Commission.
Representative Butler, Representative Johnson, members of the committee. A month ago, the Commission on Hispanic Affairs, which they meet regularly every month, they asked me if I accept on voluntary basis the position of helping the commission put together educational gatherings throughout the state of Oregon. And I must say this, I have been a volunteer for the Oregon Commission on Hispanic Affairs for a year and a half. Prior to that, for two straight years, I was one of the volunteers. I helped put together, as a matter of fact, I was the coordinator of the 2000 Latino Youth Summit that took place at the University of Oregon. We got over 270 kids there for 2 days, from all around the state, no expenses, everything paid, and plus getting a chance to we distribute 15 scholarships of $1,000 each.
I think what you're doing is terrific. I'm just trying to get a sense for the process here.
Yes.
Do you carry a business card that identifies you as a volunteer with the commission or having a title with the commission?
No, I do not.
Okay. But for your purposes, the commission has asked you to act in this education advocate role.
And I think it was by unanimous vote from all the commissioners.
The point that I'm trying to get at, and this is something that I just need to try to understand from a process perspective, I ran a state agency for 5 years, and I know how difficult it was for me, caring passionately as I did about the agency and about the issue areas where they advocated, the fine line between lobbying and advocacy and discharging my responsibilities as a representative of the state of Oregon. And I know that occasionally my agency and I personally came under intense criticism from some legislators for the perception, if not the reality, I'll admit, of my aggressive advocacy on behalf of the work of the agency. And that had, the criticism from the legislature had a chilling effect on my ability to go out and stir up the troops and get people motivated and engaged. The point that I'm trying to get to is that by your very definition, advocacy commissions, and this isn't just Hispanic, it speaks to Asian, black women, all of them, you're in the advocacy business. And yet when you talk in your testimony about holding police officers accountable, cities accountable, school boards accountable, community colleges accountable, I'm trying to understand that fine line between being a conduit for policy to the legislature and actually out in the community doing what is by any measure lobbying work, doing by what is any measure aggressive advocacy work, on behalf of the state of Oregon, and how it is that the state of Oregon can find that point of tolerance between agencies, whether it's ODOT or DHS or the Department of Aviation, out engaging people in what would be traditionally called lobbying, and having the reserve of being public servants on the other hand. And maybe you can help guide me through how the Hispanic Commission defines that difference.
Representative Butler, Representative Johnson, members of the committee, I am glad you asked the question. There is a fine line between advocacy and lobbying, and I think that that is a line that many of the people that that do volunteering work or are passionate about a cause should be very careful with. Let me say that as the Oregon Commission on Hispanic Affairs and the Oregon Commission on Black Affairs support in principle the advocacy work that the Salem Kaiser Coalition for Equality does.
Yeah, but let me interrupt you.
Yes.
It seems as though it goes beyond in principle because you're actually doing it. And you introduced yourself today as the education advocate for the commission. So I'm trying to draw the distinction between embracing in principle and putting the commission's imprimatur on you and sending you out to organize, to advocate, to lobby.
Representative Butler, Representative Johnson, members of the committee, I think that the executive director, Mr. Davila, was very clear And I am sorry you weren't present, Representative, when he talked about the gatherings that he, that the Commission on Hispanic Affairs is putting together throughout the state, the educational gatherings. And those are on an informational basis. Bringing the data, as the Representative Butler was asking me to give numbers, putting the information in the hands of the community, for the community to find ways to call for action in terms of the changing what is happening in our school districts throughout Oregon. That is, I believe, the definition of educational advocate for the Commission on Hispanic Affairs. It is to help put together the gatherings. Let me give you an example. Mr. Davila put together a gathering for the Superintendent of Education, Susan Castillo, in Eugene, February 4th. There were over 30 community members present, where the superintendent came forward with her leadership team to explain to the community the misfortunate misunderstanding that had taken place, and many of you must know about this, with one of the reports of the Oregonian talking about the fact that the state of Oregon was not going to follow or implement the No Child Left Behind legislation, and what had been misconstrued as she's saying we're not going to implement. So she came, so the commission provided the forum for the superintendent and her leadership team to come and explain to all the community members that were very concerned. So that is the type of engagement, I would say, that that I am part of, as we're trying to put together these informational gatherings throughout the state.
Last point, Mr. Chair.
Please.
I just am trying to still understand, and we may not be able to accomplish that here today, but I'm still trying to understand how that explanation about providing educational forums, how that conforms to your testimony about holding various other units of government, public educational institutions accountable, and particularly with you introducing yourself with the imprimatur of the state of Oregon. And I think that this is a slippery slope in terms of being very careful about whether you're providing forums and disseminating education and helping to formulate policy, and whether you're actually engaged in the act of lobbying with all of the attendant disclosure requirements that come with that, and lobbying under the imprimatur of the state of Oregon. It doesn't necessarily need a response. I'm just telling you that that is worrisome to me.
Okay. Representative Butler, Representative Johnson, members of the committee, I think that with the wealth of information that is available out there with regard to the implementation or the lack of implementation of the laws on education, I think that that just the fact that you help put together gatherings, educational gatherings, it is enough, I truly believe, to really raise eyebrows, and it should, in the educational community, it should raise eyebrows on all our legislature, it should raise eyebrows with our governor, it should raise eyebrows with all of us on what is happening with the education of minority children.
That's, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, that prompts a response from me. We all are worried about it. I'm just worried about process.
Okay.
We are all desperately worried about the dropout rate, and not just Hispanic, but among African-American poor children. We are desperately worried about it. But I just want to make sure that the very thin line between education and lobbying, that we're all clear about what activities agents of the state of Oregon are engaged in when they're ostensibly acting autonomously.
And Samuel, we'll let you have an opportunity to go ahead and touch base and address some of those issues directly with Representative Johnson, in as much as some explanation probably should be made, particularly where you had an opportunity to address some of that. But this has raised a new issue, and I appreciate Representative Johnson touching base with it. We are winding very close to our time, and we do have a couple of more folks that do want to testify.
Sorry.
No, and you're fine, Representative Johnson. We'll go over as necessary. Are you about completed at this point, Eduardo?
I just want to say to conclude. The Oregon Commission on Hispanic Affairs, the Oregon Commission on Black Affairs, on Women Affairs, and Nation Affairs were created with the purpose of helping facilitate communication between minorities, communities of color, the legislature, and the governor. It is clearly, when you talk about 25% of our future being left behind in the 30 percentile in reading, writing, and math, let's not talk about anything regarding about representation, legal, legislative. Let's talk about fairness, and let's talk about why these commissions were created. It took a long process for the legislature of Oregon, the governors of Oregon, to finally come to the realization that these commissions were needed, because there is no representation other than the commissions. I make the case, I believe, that it is in the best interest of the legislators to continue funding the commissions on Black, Hispanic, Asian, and Women Affairs, because it provides you with a vehicle that otherwise you will not be able to get in terms of assessing if things have been doing okay or not in all different fronts on minorities in Oregon. So with that,
Thank you very much, Eduardo. I appreciate it. And let's see. And we will, Samuel, I'm going to put you on the bottom of the list so that you can come back up and explain some of that. But I do have Xochitl Esparza, and then Johnny Lake is on deck too. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, and the members of the committee. My name is Xochitl Esparza, and I'm an employee of the Department of Human Services, but I'm also the president of the SEIU Local 503 Latino Caucus, and that's who I'm representing here today. I'm here to provide testimony in support of the Commission on Hispanic Affairs and of all the commissions to continue the funding, because the work they do is very, very important to all the communities who are traditionally underrepresented in state government. As you know, our union represents over 40,000 employees, and we estimate that about 8% of them are Latinos. During this legislative session, which is the first legislative session in which I'm involved along with my union, doing lobbying, we take our time off to come over here and provide our points of view on some of the bills or some of the issues that are presented here in this building. We have benefited tremendously this legislative session from the Commission on Hispanic Affairs legislative update, because it synthesizes what bills, favorable or not, are present, what the status is, and it's been very helpful for us. I think that you would agree that if things were equal in the state of Oregon, in the United States, there would be no need for commissions, for advocacy commissions. The work they do is very important, and I'd like to urge you to decide to fund the next biennium. And thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Questions of Mrs. Sparza? Thank you. Representative Johnson?
Mrs. Sparza, as I recall, you very capably translated at one of the other hearings. Do I have the right person?
Yes.
That was some of the most proficient on-the-spot translating that I had ever heard, and I just wanted to tell you how helpful it was to have you there at the rather extensive hearings at Ways and Means.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Sparza. Johnny?
Good morning, Representative Butler, Chair, and other legislators. Thank you again for the opportunity to speak here. I work with so many different communities that my voice is representative somewhat of those communities. The first trip here in Oregon, I went to Mount Angel. I didn't see any black people in Salem. I saw a young black man walking down the street with Nike shoes on with the strings hanging out. I pulled over my truck. I said, "What's happening, brother?" He says, "No habla inglés." He was black, but he was Latino. How many Latinos are black? Does anybody know? I think it's something really to think about when we articulate these issues as Latino issues. Because Latinos come in all colors. The president of Chile is an Asian who's Latino. And so the complexity of these issues beg for, I think, some clear understanding of where the issues are and how we can address them. And so I have questions, I guess, myself after the last 2 days of testimony of sitting here. And what does it mean when we say representation? When we talk about representation for the community, and when we look at you as representatives of the community, what does it mean? When we are advocacy commissions for those communities, does the responsibility of representation fall to us? And in the sense of advocacy, one of the best examples I heard came from a white Oregonian. You walk up to a situation where I got Representative Patridge on the ground with my foot on his neck, and you're going to advocate for Representative Patridge. You're going to spend all your time talking to Representative Patridge? Okay, don't say anything else to him. He may, you know, ease up on your neck a little bit and let you breathe. Turn your neck sideways and you can breathe a little bit better. Or don't do whatever you did that made him put his foot on your neck. You may be able to get up eventually. If you think about in that analogy, when we advocate for the communities that we represent, who do we have to address? We have to address the man that has his foot on the neck. We have to, because that person on the ground can't get out of that situation with us just addressing all of our efforts to them. And so when you look at us as advocacy commissions, and we're supposed to do all the educating in our communities, do all the uplifting in our communities, do all the work in our communities, it does not address what the primary reason for those issues are. And so when advocacy is questioned as far as lobbying, we've been through this, I think, as long as the commissions have existed. As the tide goes, sometimes they welcome us in the Capitol, sometimes you're down here too much. You shouldn't be coming down here so much. When you ask the question about why we hadn't visited, I think it's been a chill over all the commissions ever since 3 or 4 years ago when they accused us all of being lobbyists, that they don't want to fund lobbyists for these communities. How do we advocate if we can't address the representatives? And when we do address the representatives, we're accused of lobbying or doing something wrong. I mean, it's an incredible box that we are in if we intend to truly raise and address these issues. If they are inalienable rights that we all are born with, which means they can't be separated from the person, then all of these people who are below the line and suffering and failing, whatever race or whatever else, have rights of representation by the government that cannot be removed from them. And so when we look at the incredible number of failures in the Latino communities and the black communities, what does that say about the representation?
Johnny, let me just jump in right there, because that was one of the questions that I had asked preliminary to this hearing, was I asked it of every department that will be heard in general government, and Representative Patridge is hearing it getting the same responses in the Public Safety Subcommittee, and that is the department, whatever it is, engaged in any lobbying activities or training others to lobby? And the response from the department, from the Commission of Hispanic Affairs, is agency lobbying. The Commission does not engage in lobbying. We have only lobbied for our own budget this biennium. Community lobbying, we engage in training others to lobby through our legislative updates and our People of Color Action Academy. So the response is that the Commission does not engage in lobbying. So we need to be cautious as to what the activities in effect are. And I appreciate the comments also by Mrs. Sparza relative to the fact that coming out on Hispanic Affairs Commission letterhead is in fact lobbying against and for some specific pieces of legislation, some of which I thought were fairly innocuous, but obviously have twisted somebody's nose just a little bit. So I appreciate your response, but be aware that we do have a differing opinion of the lobbying activities of the Commission by the Commission themselves.
Exactly, and that's why I raise it. I don't think I have the answer. I think we need to get the answer. I think it needs to be very clear when somebody shows up to advocate about a 50% suspension rate for certain children in schools that they can be heard somewhere without being considered a lobbyist for some particular group the concern for children should bring us all to be lobbyists if that is the case.
If that's the mission. Representative Johnson.
I think what the, Mr. Chair, thank you. I think what the real issue turns around is the issue of public money. There are extremely aggressive lobbyists in this building who represent associations or trade groups or all sorts of different amalgams of folks. And the expectation with them when they're raising money privately is, be as aggressive as you want. Use any technique you want. The question that I think we're trying to get at is lobbying activity paid for with public money and done by a state agency. And I'm just trying to sort out in my mind, would it be appropriate to have ODOT sending out letterhead stationery to business groups saying, prioritize the repair of bridges and streets above everything else because it's an economic development issue. And perhaps that's an extreme example, but the point that I'm trying to get to is that by virtue of the Oregon letterhead on here, why is it ODOT is not allowed to do certain lobbying? Why is it the advocacy agencies are? And what's the difference between education, which I think we all sorely need, to tell you the truth, and active lobbying and organizing?
I think it's a good point. I think the comparison is apples and oranges, though, because ODOT is in a business. We are talking about citizens who get these rights from where? They're inalienable rights. They are born with them. They're not a business proposition we're attempting to engage when we talk about education or health care for a child or for a community. And again, I think it falls back to the question of what is the representation for these communities in this government? Because they have been excluded because of race, poverty, or gender. Now we are attempting to include them, but there are still substandard conditions for these citizens. And so when we say representation, do we ask other citizens who may happen to be white and middle class to pay for their representation? What we're asking the commissions is to go out and get money from these poor communities so they can pay for their representation, which they have by law inalienable to them as citizens. So me as a black citizen, does that categorize me as a second class citizen who now has to have a commission to get me to full citizenship, or can I not ask you? Or can I not go ask our governor? Governor, I'm a citizen of Oregon. I'm not a second class citizen of Oregon because of my race.
Mr. Johnson?
Absolutely. I mean, you are absolutely correct.
So ODOT and businesses.
But you can come and talk to me, Representative Butler, anybody in the Senate, the governor. It is the question of whether or not I think the issue of public money and where the lobbying starts and stops. And maybe we're saying the same thing, but we're just saying it wrong. Rather than taking the committee's time, I'll
come and see you about it.
Chatting with you.
Because I think as we move forward, there has to be some receding of these issues of race.
I guess my concern former representative, now Senator Winters, has testified before the committee and has stated here in committee, you know, these commissions have not been around for any short period of time. They've been around for a long time, and the question is, are we headed the right direction all of the time? Maybe not, but even my pilot, when I climb into an airplane, isn't always headed the right direction.
No.
As a matter of fact, about 99% of the time, I found out just recently, and as a pilot, Representative Johnson understands this, about 99% of the time, that compass is always off by 1 or 2 degrees. However, about 1,000 times during our trip from here to Japan, that compass will be reset to make sure that those small corrections are made. And the concern that I guess we have is that, particularly as I mentioned in just a few moments ago, in times of dire distress and need, and I think Senator Devlin has said it probably the most eloquently of any member of the committee, and when he said, you know, we've been budgeting in times of abundance, and we have a mentality of abundance, and now we've got to budget for a time of scarcity and change our mentality. And our institutional thinking has to move to one of scarcity and lack of resources. So it's about.
If you go look at the cars in the parking lot, or if you look out here on the street, you'll see how people are budgeting. We are not budgeting in that manner. We are going to the places where people have the least and attempting to budget. I think that is highly inappropriate in terms of what government was set up to do in the first place. Those are the people we have the most responsibility to, the people who are the lobbyists, who are down here with all the money and have the businesses and can fight for themselves, do not need your support and your effort as much as a citizen who is scared to come in your front door down here, because no one's ever seen any black people in the Capitol. Two black men came down here with me in the Capitol, and security stopped us at the door, wanted to know who we were. They were nervous from that point on. Why did they stop us, John? I didn't see them stop anybody else. And I mean, these are the kind of things we're attempting to overcome. And again, in the definition of the commission itself, it is to define the rights of citizens who have not had those rights to the level of normal citizenship. It's not to create a business that's going to go out and make a lot of profit. So it's an incredible dilemma when the conversation is around education and health care and food and all of these basic needs for people, rather than how much money are we going to make this year. How many other commissions function on the basis of them going out and raising money from the community that they serve?
Thank you very much, Mr. Lake. Appreciate it. And for the record, that was Johnny Lake. You didn't introduce yourself, but I need to do that.
Okay.
And we do have a written commission from Carol Suzuki, or written testimony, which was distributed yesterday from Carol Suzuki, which also applies to the commission today on Hispanic affairs. And I'm sorry that I didn't have a copy of that right here, but I believe it's in the binder from yesterday, which carries forward to today for this commission. And the last person that was already written down was Debbie Trevino, and Debbie, we did give you an opportunity to speak earlier, and I told Samuel I'd give him the last opportunity to take a shot at. Samuel, if you'd like to go ahead and do that, and I apologize for hearing everyone over.
Thank you, Representative Butler, members of the committee.
About 3 minutes, I'm well.
I will try to be extremely brief.
Thank you.
One of the main reasons why we appointed Mr. Eduardo Angulo was precisely because of his expertise, his involvement with the commission, we have been very clear that at least when he introduces himself and when he does work on behalf of the commission, it will be through sponsored activities that the commission prepares, not for his or his organization's other advocacy or lobbying that they do before the legislature. But I believe that's why Mr. Angulo kept referring back to the advocacy to the education advocate gatherings, because that was very, very clear. I'm thankful for the concerns that were raised. I believe that they are an issue, and that they will serve to guide us in making sure that as we identify other experts in different areas, that we are very, very cautious. I also welcome the concerns that and the points that were raised by Representative Johnson. During our meetings, we have explicitly struggled making sure that we not become lobbyists. We've been through too many issues before to put ourselves into another bigger issue. And from our legislative mandates in the ORS, we are mandated to monitor legislation. One, we are also mandate number three, identify and voice concerns. Now that we voice a concern against a legislation that will be extremely detrimental to the population that we are here to represent, we have identified and we have assessed that we must address legislation. Let me say that in the legislative update, we do not list that legislation in favorable or negative. It is for people to take a look at. But in some updates or alerts that we send out, we encourage people to take a look at them. And we do, if one must say, take a position, we have done that, especially because of the gravity, because of the economic benefit for our own commission, but because of the community that we represent. Overall, there is a Senate bill, for example, Senate Bill 10, that allows for immigrant students to receive in-state tuition. That is very much also a bill that we very much support, and it is the concept, it is the principle, and it is an overall benefit. So we welcome any type of guidance, suggestions from the members of this committee as to how we should proceed in the future, because we acknowledge that the previous decision to not fund the commissions, we understand the dire need of so many Oregonians, but that the mandate still stands. So as our commission still operates through these next difficult months without funding, again, we welcome any and all guidance and suggestions that you give us. Thank you.
We appreciate your testimony. We appreciate your patience with us today. With that, we'll close until even hour tomorrow. Thank you.